somewhere, it would be feasible. The fact that a lot of that stuff was cut up and ESPS came and there was a new road show, you know, had it sitting around, I think it's certainly within the Lamprey Forum has been talked about a little bit, particularly when we're putting down the ESPSs a couple weeks late and just the difference in the bar screen versus the STS traveling screens.
Yeah,
so STS
is in and low mo, and Bill doesn't complain about those two items.
Right.
Okay. Which it at this point. Which it at this point, you know, in 2028, you're looking at the turbines at one of these choir screens. So, not sure.
We got to get there first.
Much, yeah, right.
What did you find out anything for granted or goose?
I'm just looking.
Otherwise, we can ask that question here when George Melanson's going to get on the phone along with the chief of ops. So they ought to be joining us here in another 10 minutes or so.
I think George is just trying to call in. So.
Oh, really? Okay. So as soon as he gets online, we can ask.
Okay, we'll add this one to the next FPOM agenda then for further discussion.
So he'll, you know, work with Carl to update this, see what other information we can get, if anything, and have some further discussion.
Late start fund?
All right. So moving on to MCN 003, backflush orifices. Some modification to paragraph C6 regarding the collection channel.
All right, this is another one that we requested. The problem you run into here is that when you're, there are 42 of these orifices, and basically when you are shutting one down and back flushing it, on the off chance there might be debris there. If there's going to be debris in the orifice, you're going to know when you come by and inspect it, because the debris, a plugged orifice, is going to show up in a reduced flow. It's pretty evident when it does it, but it doesn't happen very often. We get plugged orifices about 10 times a year at McNary, and you got to go, I think I've been there 3 years, and granted I don't do the inspection every day, it's, for me it's once or twice a week typically when nobody else is around, but the I think I've seen one plugged orifice since I've been there. So it's not a very common event. And when you're going, and when you do get a plugged orifice, back flushing it is about the last thing you do. The first thing you try to do is run it through several cycles, and that usually will do the trick. If it doesn't at that point, you call in the riggers, the crane crews, and whatnot like that, and try pulling it out there, and the last thing you do is flush it. And there are a lot of reasons for that, but the worst problem is when you flush it, it just puts the stuff right back in the gate well, and you're going to have to deal with it again.
So, Carl, why don't you provide further explanation why this is so different than what goes on the snake? Because back flushing is the method of choice on the snake. It has been for years because of, historically, there was a really high probability that at least once a year one of the gate wells in slot one at Granite or Goose would plug with debris. And by back flushing all of the orifices on a routine basis that were open, that's been eliminated in recent years. And so I know McNary's different, and I think it would be appropriate for you to help us all understand why McNary is different.
Yeah, I can't speak for the state projects because I never worked on them. You know, all I can speak is what I see, and just to reiterate again, if it's plugged, you're going to see it when you're walking by and inspecting it. You know, plugged orifice is going to have reduced flow.
Well,
you
know, there's another concern too, is when it starts to clog, you might just have one stick in there that kind of starts everything, and that back flush might initiate the process of just dislodging that one
actually
stick.
Actually, cycling, which is the best method for clearing it, that we do anyway. You know, we cycle up to 4 times a day.
What do you mean by cycling?
You open and close the valve through the orifice, right, where it comes through the wall. And that works better than back flushing to remove the clog. That's normally how you remove a clog, and 90% of the time it's successful.
Has joined the conference.
The 10% of the time when it's not successful, that's when you have to bring in the riggers. And that's when you do backflush too, if nothing else works. But it's kind of a last ditch thing. And the cycling itself is usually going to unclog it. The one that I found, like I said, it's the one I've seen in 3 years. All I did to cycle it a couple times, it was gone. We didn't even have to do anything.
Yeah, this is George from Little Goose.
Has joined the conference.
But when you do the backflushing, you're closing the thing for a lot longer than you just would with a cycle. The cycle, you close the valve, open back up, it's done, you move on to the next one. When you're backflushing it, you have to close the thing, then you have to open a couple of extra valves, blast it out with the air, you know, and then close them back up and open them back up again. It takes quite a bit longer, not for an individual one, but by the time you do four of them, it takes, probably 3 or 4 times the amount of time it does to go through and just cycle. And it's not as effective as the cycling. And the thing you also have to remember, every time you close one of those for a period of time, you're delaying fish beyond what you really need to. And the second thing is, I don't know if you've ever been around those open airlines or not, but when you're standing next to one of them, those things are extremely loud. And you can't really hear it much when you're doing it, you know, underwater. But, you know, fish, you know, they're going to feel the impact of it. It's pretty disruptive of them. It's a lot of noise generated down there. And creates quite a disturbance, and it can't be good for the fish. So, you know, why create an unnecessary disturbance when you don't even have a plugged orifice to begin with? Anyway.
For me, there's a few too many unknowns for this, so I think we need to look into it a little bit further if you want to go down this road. Maybe do a little investigation into some of these assumptions that you have and or ideas that you have. Get Gary involved in that discussion. He has some pretty strong comments in here that he's not ready to relax on this particular issue. So if you want to have some more discussion at FPOM, I think that would be a good place to start.
Sure.
Yeah, and I would recommend that maybe you talk a little bit with the hydraulics folks and you come in with a scenario where you can walk them through some debris that's sitting potentially on the backside. You're opening and closing this, where that debris is likely to go versus if you use the air, how far away from the orifice that debris might likely to go, just to build a hypothetical scenario. Because you are really butting up against a pretty established within our area process, and I certainly understand why they're a little bit reluctant. That the history of losing a lot of hatchery spring Chinook at the peak of spring outmigration and the peak of the flows is nasty. McNary is now seeing a lot more of that same debris that Granite and Goose used to historically be the only ones to get now that we have all these spillway weirs in place. So I think, you know, I understand the need for caution. So we'll see if we can't, you know, work to develop a little bit more of a hypothetical, theoretical scenario with some better documentation of the mechanism that you're trying to describe versus the mechanism that's occurring at these other places that everyone already agrees is effective. Because that's what we have to develop for these guys to consider that, I think.
We'll get to some yeses here.
Really?
Time to go.
And you know, this, Carl, if we're able to have the Avian meeting out there, that might be a place to talk about this mechanism as well. Right. Carl's orifices are not buried in a concrete wall to the same extent that they are on the snake, at least at Granite and Goose too. So, you know, there is some different physical layout at the facility. So, anyway.
One of the things I didn't mention also, it's in this thing I said to you yesterday, but when you're doing that during freezing conditions, you're putting water into those lines that would normally not be in there, into the air lines, and that itself has its own complications, possibly busted lines and stuff like that. So you don't have them when you really need them. You could lose them when you really need them.
Water into the air lines?
Yes. Yeah, when you turn it off, the water goes in. There's probably like a maintenance issue, but it is about
a design issue.
Okay, so let's plan to work with you, district, work with you, Carl, towards the next FPOM on both of these, kind of some rewrites, gathering some more information, see what we can put together to present.
All right.
And George joined. Do we want to ask George the question that you asked before, Trevor? Or was it Bill?
I think Bill asked one of those questions.
So, George, one of the questions that came up, we're doing McNary now, but they asked, what was the frequency of cleaning brush movement for your ESVSs? The timing, is it the 15 minutes or was it 60 minutes? Wasn't that the question?
At the start, when the unit is brought on.
The ESVS brushes, it depends on the degree, but we can program it to either 2 hours. Every 2 hours, they would cycle. The unit has to be running, and they would cycle every 2 hours or 4 hours, depending on the amount of brew we have coming in.
This Tom Morris.
How long it takes the brush to travel up one full motion and then travel back down?
I think the question was, is like when you first deploy your screen, do you set your screen cleaning to a different setting than you do later, or do you just keep a constant screen cleaning frequency?
No, we have increased the frequency if debris starts to come in during the fresh set. And it's really starting to plug up horses, we will increase it to a 2 hour frequency from a 4 hour frequency. Those are the only two options we have.
So you don't set them at 15 minutes when you first deploy them?
No.
And make a note that McNary runs them on 60 minute cycles, so that may be why we don't have problems.
Okay, so actually this is a whole magnitude different, I think, than people are expecting to. So. Maybe Carl, as we develop this, let's find out what we heard what George has, but let's put this in. We'll hear what Granite has as well. Those will be our three ESBS projects. Come back and talk about that, because this may be a place where everything over time is not lined up with what we have written down.
Yeah, we have done some adaptive management for each project.
Yeah, there's a different amount of debris in the area than there is that there is.
That's probably the reason.
The debris type is totally different. Also, so. Yeah.
What are we going to let it tell me?
We're not seeing the problem, so it's not working. It
says, do you want to change it? All right, to be further discussed. So we'll see if we can get one from McNary here. In the yes column. we're 1-for-3, so. MCN 004, reorganize the warm water ops section. I think this was just wasn't a change necessarily, it was just a reorganization that was more logical with how the project thought the information should flow.
And the only thing I have to say on that is also puts table 6-for-4. 4.111 or 1.1 also, so it works on both ends of that section.
Any comments or questions?
Yes.
There's your yes.
Yay! Look at that. Slam dunk. All right. And MCN 005 is just that table that has been added to all the projects for operating limits and information. And the Walla Walla projects have provided a section regarding fish structure and/or operation start dates. So there is some additional information for the Walla Walla projects.
Gary's comments. He wanted to know the difficulty. Well, not here. So you get to exodus.
Yeah.
There is a reason why it says, you know what, the reason why it says.
Okay. Two down. Nice. MCN 006, spill table updates. This was a change to the volume of spill that goes through the TSWs. Previously, it's in one bay, it said 5.5 KCFS, and the second bay, it said 5.2. It has now been changed so that both bays say 5.5. And NOAA's feedback is clarifying somewhere in the, either in the table or the text, the reason for the change, and maybe the Carl or Ann could speak to why that change is.
The project didn't initiate that, so I have no clue why the change did.
Yeah.
It's really to make it more correct. And so recall that I believe it was 2010 or 11, we pulled those out and said, okay, we're going to now have a TSW-1 structure. There's no longer going to be a distinction between a TSW-1 and a TSW-2. And when we took that step to both have TSW-1s, then we had equal amount of flow going through both those bays. And so, yeah, this is something that Ryan Lowry noticed, and it's, again, something that changed several years ago and hasn't been updated inside Fish Passage Plan. So this is just a correction more than anything else.
But wouldn't it be more correct to have a ring? Your forebay doesn't hold still.
Yeah, you know, well, we've always in the spill tables just had a flat amount.
I've joined the conference.
In the spill table, you just have a given amount, and it tells you the elevation. So that's only good for that one elevation.
So was there a different capacity for the two TSWs?
Yes.
Okay.
So, you know, that. We could probably talk about that more, and FPOM might be more appropriate if you want to get into this, the differences. Trevor, that they're physically they were different, and you can see roughly the amount of difference that there was in terms of the flow. It was noted. It wasn't anything that was ever really highlighted when they first brought them into play in 2007, but it was brought up. It was mentioned in the research reports. Kind of briefly in the radio telemetry and the telemetry done by USGS. We could bring someone in or some drawings and show you kind of the difference. But TSW-2 used to have the leaf attached, and it had a different closure mechanism than when you make them a TSW-1, where you just set a crest on top of stop logs.
Okay.
So that's what we have now is the simple.
That's fine.
So I think we're good with this one if everybody's
yep.
Okay.
I'm on a roll. Moving on to MCN 007 4-bay debris.
Okay. We've been struggling with this one for a couple of years now, trying to make it more functional. Basically, the problem the project is facing is that the current procedure, doing all the notifications and so on to spill debris, is pretty cumbersome. And by the time you go through it, the wind shifts, everything changes, and you're back to square one. And what we're trying to do is get a system where we can move on it real fast, because like I say, all it takes is a shift in the wind to negate everything we were going to try to do. And we've experimented around with some new techniques and so on this past year that were really quite successful in moving the debris. And the big thing about the debris and the need for the notification, we have all this thing about calling John Day Dam. Well, I've talked to Merrill on this thing. He could probably second me. You know, John Day, it's like they never see our debris. Or if they do, it takes 2 days for the larger, so, you know, several days actually, for the largest stuff to move down to John Day. So you're really not talking about impacts to John Day. You're talking about impacts to boaters and stuff below the dam. And that's where the need is for a public notice
of, joined the conference.
You know, that McNary is going to be spilling debris.
Has joined the conference.
Let's remember the main reason for doing that. Otherwise, you can just spill debris and never tell anybody and not hurt anything. But you can impact the boaters downstream, especially the pleasure boaters, pleasure craft. I doubt it has much impact on the big barge tows or anything like that. So I was trying to figure out a way, and I sent a response back to Ann late yesterday. I didn't have that much time. I just scrambled yesterday to get a response out to Gary's comments. And I was trying to think about a way to address it, to make it functional and still meet the needs of the resource agencies. And I think what it really gets down to, the emergency section we have on there basically only applies when TSWs are in place. Look at the fish passage plan. It says emergency spills. This is 5.1.1 for anybody that has a fish passage plan in front of you. It says implement as necessary to pass any debris that is accumulating in front of one or both TSWs, compromising safe, unobstructed passage of fish. The operating project will immediately spill the woody debris to remove the obstructions to fish passage. The operating project will notify the district of the emergency spill as soon as possible to provide notifications to RCC, NOAA Fisheries, and other FPOM participants. Where we really need to spill the thing isn't just the potential impacts on the TSWs. In fact, the worst problem is with when you have debris in front of the powerhouse and it's accumulated there and it's dumping a bunch of junk, and that's when you start getting the trash racks plugged up and getting a lot of problems with the BBSs, probably the ESBSs, but they seem to be doing fine. So that's the stuff you have to be able to move on. That's more critical than anything. That in front of the spillway, as long as it stays in front of the spillway, it really isn't hurting anything. And typically the wind loves to move it back in front of the powerhouse, so you have to deal with those. We've had couple of emergency events. We lost the channel a couple of years ago. We almost lost it last year. We got lucky. And you need to be able to get that stuff out of there. In the past, we brought in a tug from North Granite and circled the stuff, hauled it away. That worked great. Dumped it down either a TSW or actually down a spillway weir. But we developed a technique just this last year where basically you take the big Crane 5, attach a 40, 50-foot boom to it, and move that thing along. You can sweep that by process of sweeping it and rolling the units over to the open TSW, and down she goes. So it's a great system to work, but to do that all requires timing. You got to do it while it's there before the wind blows it away. So what I suggested, this last thing I came up with yesterday, is basically eliminating the last sentence, or changing the last sentence, last two sentences, in the introductory paragraph there. Let's see, that would be 4-bay debris removal in the paragraph that follows that. The last two sentences start with, normally the project shall conduct the district and John Day Dam control room and fishery biologists at least 2 working days prior to the day of the special operation, and they're talking debris spill, is required. Using the information provided by the project, the district will notify FPOM, et cetera, teletype goes out and everything. What I suggest is scratching those lines and replace it with the following lines and just totally eliminating that emergency spill clause because you would no longer need it. What I suggest replacing it with the words, the project shall contact CE or district and the John Day Dam, et cetera, when the debris spill is necessary to pass wood debris that is accumulated in the forebay, compromising the, and here I mentioned forebay, not just TSWs, compromising the safe, unobstructed passage of fish. The operating project will spill the wood debris as soon as practical to remove any obstruction to fish passage. The operating project will notify district of the debris spill as soon as possible to provide notification to RCC, NOAA Fisheries, and other FPOM participants. That way you get around to just this fixation on the TSW, and it broadens it enough to where you can address spillway, address debris that's in the forebay, not just in front of the TSWs. And just like I say, the worst problem isn't even in front of the spillway, it's in front of the powerhouse. That's where you really got to get it out, because that's the stuff that's been causing us the worst nightmares, at least since I've been there, and historically too. So anyway, I just thought I'd throw that out. That's a whole bunch of new stuff to throw at everyone. So if you want more time to think about it, I can certainly, see that. But this just gives us the flexibility we need to be able to react to conditions. And it still gives chance for the entities to get out notice to the public, the voters and stuff like that. And we'll still notify John Day, but I don't think they really care.
Carl, it's supposed to be broken down into 2 different times. When you're already spilling, you're not going to notify anybody. You're already spilling. So you just move debris over in front of it and it goes through. I thought we were going to address in this one is those times when we're not spilling, or just before we stop spilling, we're going to push debris in front of it and then open and close them.
Well, you take advantage of the TSWs being in place, try to move stuff before you remove them, because it is easier to get it off with the TSWs in some respects, although it works very well just with splitting the gates and spilling it. That's what we did on the last spill, because it was, the TSWs were gone by that time, and just all you got to do is split the gates and it goes, shoots right out.
When we're already spilling TSWs around, why would you notify anybody? You're not changing spill. You're not doing anything.
What we've been doing is taking the 4-bay stuff and bringing it over to the TSW, and that really requires a notification. The way it is right now, the way the rule is written.
Notification to NIMS or notification?
We have to notify. When we do a spill like that down the TSWs, it's one thing if it just goes down the TSW and we're not doing anything to force it, okay? But we're forcing it. We're taking huge concentrations, these huge debris rafts, and using the crane or a boat or whatever, moving it over in front of the TSW.
I thought you were only notifying us when you're opening up another spill bay.
Correct. Yes.
And you already have the TSWs in operation. Overspilling, you're throwing things down that.
Right.
If you open up another spill bay, go outside a spill requirement, that's when you notify us.
Well, that also requires notification.
That's extremely
required. Right, right.
But the first scenario doesn't.
If you're taking, in the past, we've always thought that when you were doing extra efforts to spill it over the TSW, we had to notify you.
No, opening up more of the spill bays.
And any time you go outside, it's a spill pattern that you're supposed to be operating.
If you're taking a unit offline,
And we've been doing that too. We rolled units. But this still requires notification. It just gives you a lot more flexibility to do it fairly quickly when you have a problem.
Well, let's let NIMS or any of the other agencies comment. I'm wondering, though, if this isn't, again, a place where if you better describe your scenario rather than just, you know, what you have isn't working, and you would identify how much debris, you know, you're talking about rather than just this big debris issue, and talk about the fact that you've got maybe 4 units over there that now have considerable amounts of debris, maybe 20 foot deep or something like that, and give an estimate. And now you're at the point where this is appropriate for you to take action, because right now there's no quantifiable other than debris in here, and so I'm sensing that people are not totally kind of, that we might be heading towards another no rather than the potential to change some language if we had a better description. But why don't we listen and see how people feel?
Yeah. I kind of like your language about, you know, changing the TSW language to a 4-bay. You know, I think that seems appropriate, but some of these other concerns, I don't know if it's even necessary either from what Scott's talking about. I think that on a Friday or something like that, you know, if you go and do this and you put a bunch of debris into the river and then don't notify anybody until Monday or something like that. I think that could be a problem.
Or immediate notification.
As soon as possible. But if you did it like at the close of business on Friday and nobody was there, John Day, all the debris shows up on a Monday, then that would be a concern.
According to John Day, they never know it.
Yeah, and then
we always tell them, but they said we never see it.
They never see it. Huh? Yeah.
Well, that's a long reservoir.
Right. But you do get a lot of debris, too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But I can see it eventually getting there, but maybe so. Yeah. But my opinions aren't as strong on this as Bill. Bill, do you want to speak to this a little bit?
It is McNary, and if you were proposing it for one of the Snake River projects, I'd have problems with it. But It's different in the area. I know about how debris builds up in that 4-bay. We've been dealing with that for 20 years. I tend to think that there's been a way to move that debris over to the spillway for 20 years too, because it builds up, and I'm not sure what
Well, we've tried.
What we're having a problem with here.
Yeah, we've had problems. And like I said, the last, not this year, but the 2 years before, we brought in the tub from Lower Granite because we just didn't have a way to move it. I guess historically in the past, they've actually had contractors bring in tugs and tow it over to the shore and burn it or whatever like that. But that's really expensive and takes a huge amount of time. But this method we developed this last year, the first time we tried that, and it works beautifully. We don't think we'll ever have to bring a boat in there again. You should have seen it. It was basically a combination of rolling the units and using the big crane 5 to, like a big broom, basically. And it, we got rid of all of it last year very easily.
So I think rolling the units, you're going out of unit priority. That's something that might need notification.
Yeah. You could probably do it without rolling the units, but it sure worked great when we were using rolling the units. And, you know, we had it all approved, so we rolled them, but I think you could probably do it without even rolling the units.
But yeah, there's been mixed results on using the units because they've asked for it many times. They didn't use it and then did use it. The question is, how long are you rolling a unit? I mean, it's just minutes or... So it's not like a big deal. We could put a blanket if you're going to move debris, roll them. You know, it's not something that we really need to spend a lot of our time every time it goes, either get a notification or talking about it. It's pretty routine. Right. And this new crane thing, that works great. I went out there 2 years ago and the whole forebay was covered in front of our house. That was a mess. So this is great that you now have something at your beck and call.
Yeah. Also, we'll talk about some more. Yeah.
Carl, I just had a question regarding the approval comment. For example, in 5.0 or just 5.0, it doesn't allude to the operative term approval like it does in 5.1. Could you clarify, is the intent of the changes in the first section with the idea there as far as, it says right here, ODT will notify FPOM. I'm asking because in the subsequent section it goes to that same process, but there's a little difference, and it just says it'll require.
Yeah, that probably needs to be rephrased.
Okay, so in 5.1 it does say it's not just coordination, but it's approval, but it doesn't in the previous. Could you clarify with the changes in 5, was the intent to still have? Because it's one thing when you send that email out to FBOM and just say, hey, we're going to do it next, possibly, we're going to do it maybe sometime next week.
Yeah.
Versus, please get your comments in by close of business today, because if you object or don't like the unit rolling or whatever, but I just, could you clarify that? If it's
Sure. Yeah, and as I explained to Ann when I sent this, I worked on this, I had a very short time to work on this yesterday. I was trying to respond to Gary's comments, get something together. Time for this meeting, and I didn't have time. I finished this about 3:30 yesterday and got it down just as quickly as I could so she could go over it before the meeting. But it's going to take, you know, obviously more time to redo 5.1 and so on, too. So it needs to be done together with this.
Okay, but I am just curious so I know the spirit. And the reason I'm asking is from a big picture standpoint, we reworked this language. I think last year as well as the year before.
Yeah, we've been struggling with it for a couple of years now.
And so we've kind of got it, memorialized with snake projects, and so I just want to make sure I understood if McNary was different, what was different. And so I'm just trying to better understand, is the intent to have approval or not approval, or is that still...
I think we need to go back and work on the wording some more. Like I say, like you pointed out, probably need to change 5.1 as well. I'll take a look at that. We'd probably maybe be able to get it ready by next week, I don't know.
So maybe we can talk about the scenarios and help people understand how it is out at the project when this is developing and how some changed language would help you better operate and maintain the facility. Because I think this isn't just you at the fish facility. I think this is you working with the staff that you require assistance from up in the powerhouse. So this is, maybe we lay out the scenario of how this is developing and how it would be an asset for you to be able, under whatever conditions we describe, to be able to move ahead and then report that you took action due to some criteria. And otherwise, unless maybe they don't want that. I mean, Trevor's kind of still on the fence in terms of playing.
I think it can be done. I think I think if he rewrites the language a little bit, makes it more clear, and we're comfortable with those changes, I think we can do that.
We're fine with removing debris.
Really, what we're trying to do is avert emergencies. And really, what we're trying to do is get that junk out of there before it screws us up. Screws us up like it did the last couple of years.
But we just don't want too many things going on without everybody knowing about it.
Right.
Yeah. That's on the fence of being a significant factor. Right.
So we'll try to bring all three of these to next FPOM, I guess. Updates, huh, Carl?
Yes.
Carl, I just remembered about 10 years ago, it was on the SCT spreadsheet to buy a boat specifically to round up debris in the Mary Forbay and process it. So it's been a problem around for a long time.
Yeah, we looked into it. We actually did some work on the cost of a boat like we on our need is about $650,000 for one like that. Now
we had an idea of a barge that had a way of just move out a belt that moved the debris up on top of the
right. But where we are now, though, we think we have a technique where you don't need a boat. It certainly worked well this past year, and if we can continue to use that in the future, it's going to save a lot of money and solve a lot of problems.
Well, it's good for the estuary to do that.
Well, that is a problem, maybe we should truck it around and drop it in the ocean or something, or drop it below bottom.
That's a good idea. We could go to a transport.
I mean, bear in mind, I'm a habitat biologist.
We could hold on to Mary's transport.
There you go.
Shift the juveniles.
I'm a retired WDFW habitat biologist, and the idea of removing wood and debris from the stream bothers me, I think that's probably why I don't like to haul it out, I like to just dump it over the spillway and leave it in the system.
All right, we'll add that to the list, the growing list of future actions. Moving to MCN 008, which is the change as a result of the no transport at McNary. There are quite a few comments on this one from the NOAA memo. Let's see here.
Well, this is the first shot at it.
Yeah, exactly. This is a...
I'm looking for getting everything out I could, and I can see where
circle
it could
of
be
death.
Confusing when you say collecting fish for inspection only, basically, like we do at John Cave. So if I eliminate that word also with the comments that Gary had in his note, actually removed McNary from
saving.
This is also in combination with Appendix B. I should have, that's why it was confusing right there. Because that's what you mentioned here, because we removed McNary.
Press keeper has joined the conference.
So basically what he's saying is I think we're pretty flexible to change this. For those that aren't aware,
taking a crack at it.
These guys, we've tried to move forward, anticipating what we thought we would see in the biop, and there's been a lot of static noise around our district and some other areas that have made it difficult to really talk through and clairvoyant very broadly. And so now everybody's kind of settled. Now we've passed that benchmark, and we're kind of ready to move forward here with the appropriate language. So we can work with you on this. Maybe, again, we take a look at the comments that are made here. If we have any place where we're not comfortable, we'll bring that to the next FPOM. Otherwise, we'll just probably pretty much be pretty willing to go with what's here based on what I read. I didn't see anything that,
it wasn't negative
that was controversial
from
at all.
What I saw, and it's just maybe pointing out a few little things.
Well, I think Gary's issue was, the reason we check so many fish there was because of transport, and without the transport going on, you don't really need that high of a check. So, and just by removing the changing those two words around, it made it seem like we need to check all those fish when really we don't.
Yeah, that's fine and dandy.
Well, it's fine with us in district. You guys go to FPOM, you'll recall that we've talked about this twice already, and the project and WDFW have not been particularly supportive. So, Carl is here today and he can speak his mind. But as we move into 2014, John Bailey been putting together that biological services, has been working with Carl on the project, and we have asked the question, would it be appropriate to make a change in the frequency? And we've talked about what other projects do. The project is still intending to do what they have been doing, every other day sampling. And so if others feel differently and want to see change, we need to have more dialogue. But at this point in time, what is anticipated to take place is similar to last year.
Yeah, I think we feel it's appropriate that the transport program changes to make a change in the sampling.
So let's have that on an FPOM agenda. And one of the things when we've talked about this more broadly in FPOM is it always gets down to kind of Gary making a comment, well, we have to understand the biometrics, you know, implications. And so maybe this is a place where, Dave, if you're going to be there, you might want to come with some alternatives or suggestions so that, I think one of the things that I brought early on last year was, how about if we just did 12-hour, how about we did it just during the peak? And then it was like, well, would you really be giving us the same indices, what we're getting with the data and things like that? We kind of inquired for feedback and with the project, and Charles Morrell feels very strongly too. So, we're going to want to get him involved, because even if Carl starts a waft, I'm going to get splattered with Charles' phone calls immediately after leaving a meeting here. So we do want to kind of broadly talk about it and bring some stuff forward. But, yeah, one of the things that's been talked about for years is minimizing the handling so that we do maximize survival. And, certainly it's important for us to be able to assess fish conditions, but, the fact that he's sampling doesn't necessarily have to mean that he handles as many fish as he would when he's transporting. He can set the sample rate differently too, and so that's another place, as we talk about alternatives, that we might want to just change language so that you're still doing it every other day, because they feel that's important. And their best interest is for fish here, that they feel that just doing their inspections, that they may not catch some place where we have debris hanging up that's causing fish damage.
That's okay. The issue. That's all we're checking for. So.
Yep.
Well, one of the days last year when the descaling jumped, it was just a quick spike in the middle of the week, and we caught it. We've been sampling twice a week, fighting and caught it. So it all depends on how much you want to know what's going on there. There may be certain times of year, and this is so torn, because damn if you do and you damn if you don't. You start getting into the high temperature situations, you start to get mortality and stuff like that. If you sample, you're disturbing the fish even more, adding more to the stress. If you don't sample, you may not be spotting problems for their risk when they're expected to come up. So, what's the best thing to do? It's a tough question.
Okay, so this is going to be on the next FPOM agenda, and we'll keep talking about this till we get everybody comfortable. So we may or may not get this resolved in a short time frame. I suspect this will take some discussion as we move into the spring. But Carl, maybe you can take this back to Rosanna as well, which will tip off Charles. And I think, does Charles go to SCT or TMT?
Charles on the phone, actually.
Okay, so Charles, you hear that I understand that you're going to have concerns, and please make sure that you're attending and commenting as we start discussing this.
You may not hear from that.
You guys.
I'm not anybody.
You tell me he's there and he's not. Okay.
Well, he said he was.
Okay. So anyway, let's move on. Sorry to bedoggle that, but it's been a little frustrating. I'm glad that people want to come out with some clear guidance, and we'll have some discussion.
This next one, ESPS inspection, and this is the one I think you were talking about, inspecting them after we pull them. Apparently there was a problem at Lower Granite, I think it was, last year, whatever like that, they found some.
Can you submit it to this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you talk about it and see what happened? Well, this was just Carl was alluding to last December, the Lower Granite pool streams. Apparently there were some lamprey that were either entrained or starting to brush on some of the screens, and they sat there for a while until the researchers spotted them. some of us later, and they were asked. So we were asked if we're routinely checking the ESVS up the pool for mortalities. And so the change form is a way to show that we are. I understand McNary and LaGoose are actually do this every year. They check the screens and monitor from warts, and they report it to us. More granted, not necessarily so, but the change form then is those three projects with the ESVS, and they would check the screen within a week after removal or as practical, and they could get to it. And that's basically it.
From the project standpoint, we don't care whether it's on there or not. To me, it's just one more thing they have to do if the project's doing it anyway.
Right.
Oh, we're fine with it.
Yeah, okay. We're fine.
And you may have already mentioned this, but this has been included for all Walla Walla projects, so yeah. So that would be the
two with the ESBSs.
With
yep.
The ESBSs.
Yeah.
So just three of the
okay.
Five.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. All right. And last but not least, for McNary, MCN010 operating gate position. This is.
Is Trumbull on?
Yes, I'm on.
So Gary had some concerns with this one.
This study wasn't the clearest for some, so he requested somewhat of a rewrite of the study, and I don't think he's had an opportunity to go through that yet. So
okay.
I think it was mostly you want to take a look at the north-south units and right. See if they were consistent. I don't know if the researchers have had a chance to review that and respond back.
Okay.
So I think once
it sounds like not much changed when they kind of redid the data and stuff. So it's probably going to be a go, but he needs to look at that one more time and make sure.
So Trevor, let me ask you, do you have any idea about when Gary may be back to work?
I can only guess, but just knowing him, I think probably next. I would expect him back next Monday or Tuesday.
Okay, I'm just considering because I think I should probably set up a meeting sometime in the next couple 3 weeks or so, before the next spare week, so we can actually discuss what he and other folks think about it. I was going to try to do that sooner than later since the next spare week is at the end of February, so.
Okay. Yeah, maybe give him a call on Monday and see if he's in.
Okay. That sounds good. But with that said, I don't know if anyone on the phone or at the meeting has had a chance to look through the final report, but I believe the revisions that were made relative to all the comments have really improved the read and should make everyone feel better about the results.
Brian, are you hoping to change the stowage position by this year?
Yes, that's the change form. The project for the performance standard testing is going to go this year. Everybody was on board for that. That was the path forward. And so
April 1.
What happened was Gary had made some comments back through SRWG. Those comments kind of hit in the face of the FPP here. We hadn't really seen any of those, and so that's why Brad was on the phone today. So he's thinking that he's addressed Gary's comments and or anyone else's comments, and so when you review his revised draft, hopefully there's no issue. But if there is, then he's going to need to have some further discussion.
So we plan on give him a thumbs up on this next meeting, or now send it to changing if Gary has it different.
I guess as soon as Gary reviews the changes they've made, and or Tom or anyone else, if they want to make sure that it's to their satisfaction. Did you have additional issues, or?
I just need to take a look at the report and see. I didn't realize it had we'd seen a revised report out, so I'll check and take a look.
Yeah, if anyone has a hard time finding it, just let me know and I can get it to you.
Lisa, when do you need it for printing?
Oh my gosh, next Friday. what, February?
So it may not be done by then, depending on when Gary gets back. I mean,
I'd say the drop dead date for printing is February 14th or so.
The day after.
Yeah, we'll say the day after. We'll just say it by the next FPOM. And, you know, like Gary pointed out, this is a living document. If it comes in before printing, then we can always add it to the online thing. But the goal is to get it to the printer sooner than later this year.
Yeah, so. I had that reinforced yesterday, too.
I'm sure.
We really, what I talked about the last time, and that is that we have people that want to do what they're supposed to do. And when they pick up last year's and do that to water up their facilities, they feel very nervous that they're not doing what they're supposed to do. And even if we give them something that doesn't have all the latest and have to add the latest later, they're going to feel that they're better facilitating what we're asking them to do than knowing that things are changing and not knowing what's changing year to year. So that's the other question that someone fielded yesterday from one of the projects, and that was just, you know, flagging things. And I think the where we have to go with these folks is, you know, probably not assumptions. You know, don't assume too much is the same, but usually we're pointing out, you know, with these change forms, the big things that are changing.
Right. And that's why I was hoping to get this one resolved by next week, just to get it in print and be underway with it. It sounds like there's a general comfort with it. It's just putting the finishing touches on it.
Yeah, I mean, if he doesn't get to it by next week, I'll just make a call on it. So, but I'll give him a chance to on Monday, Tuesday to get to it.
Yeah.
Can add to your email.
What's that?
You can add your email to him.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, Trevor?
Yeah.
If you read through that thing and have any questions or whatever, just give me a shout.
Okay, we'll do.
Okay, thank you.
All right. And the last one for McNary is the DIEL graphs, which are the same for the all the other projects, just an introduction of the DIEL distribution of adults at that project. So unless someone has comments on that, we'll move to the next project, Ice Harbor.
Back just a quick second. There was talk, I think when Gary reviewed it, he mentioned a couple of sections that weren't in. The things, and just to address it very briefly, I don't want us to move on this today because I haven't had a chance to run past the project yet, but it refers to the turbine units not operating for more than 10 hours and preferably less than 3 hours, and the suggestion here seems excessive, and I agree with that. As a policy, we don't really let them go more than 3 hours without opening orifices again or shutting down the turbine or whatever. But that's mentioned not only in 2.3.1.2.B.5, it's also on 3.1.2.3, again, where it mentions that 10-hour figure. And I need to run this by the project, but from what I've seen so far, I don't really have any objection to just flat out making it 3 hours.
3 hours or coordinate, or if you have to coordinate.
Yeah, or coordination, okay. Right, yeah.
That'd be 5 hours.
Yeah, but like I say, I want to run it by the project people, and they haven't had a chance to really spend much time on it yet.
Good.
And I don't have anything else on the other one.
That one will fade into what we were talking about before, right?
Yeah, fit into the
alternatives for sampling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Discussion. Sorry, Lisa, thanks.
That's okay. All right. So two of the three Ice Harbor change forms are already approved, just based on that they're the same as for other projects. So we'll look at 14 IHR 002, which is unit dewatering.
Oh, Mark's not here, but I took a stab at it. But basically, it's the same wording. Turn this on. It's same wording, except for raising headgates, which doesn't quite make sense. I think he means lowering headgates, because that means closing off the unit.
Hey, Tammy and others, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, we can hear you on the phone.
Okay, so I'm Charles Morrill. Hey, before you get into that one, I missed some of the earlier ones. The first one on Ice Harbor are the facts and description. And I see that's a repetitive thing, but I wondered if anybody could consider adding in the number of orifices and the sizes in that fact and description. They're scattered throughout the others, there are different size orifices at each of the projects. And as I looked at that information, I felt that would be nice to have that information and the facts and description as well.
That could be done.
Charlie, I think that was something that can be looked into, be added. It may not be added for this rewrite, but it could be added over time.
Yeah. Okay.
Good answer.
Appreciate the comment, Charlie, too.
I don't like you guys too much more.
Okay, John, go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, what this section is about, when you're unwatering a unit, you don't want fish stranded in the unit when you're doing a salvage operation. So generally they will run a unit for 15 minutes or whatever to roll the unit to get the fish out of the skull case, out of the draft tube, and then put the stop logs in and lower the head gate. This version that I see here shows raising the head gate, which means you're returning the unit to service. So it's kind of backwards. I think he means lowering the head gate. But basically it's the same phrase except adding the head gate part of it.
It sounds like it needs a rewrite.
I think your intention's good. Check the lowering part, and then if you're saying lowering and closing the unit off, then yes, we can stop.
When you lower the head gate, you close off the unit.
That's usually how it works. Unless you got different units up there.
Let's check that revision, then they're good with it if we can revise it that simply.
Okay. Charles Morrow
has left the conference.
All right, then.
And you say we need to send in a revision or just stick it here?
We need to double check on the wording of what you're suggesting you think it should say. And as Tom just mentioned, if that's what it really should say, then they're good with it. It's a thumbs up. We'll just submit it and Lisa will consider it okay.
Yep.
If it's different than that, then we'll have to bring back a revision.
Okay.
Yep.
So bear with me a moment. The Microsoft Word monster is not cooperating.
Same got the blue screen of death.
And the beep. Don't ever want to hear the beep. All right, so I'm going to close some of these out. Okay, give me 1 second to reopen the agenda. So it looks like that pretty much does it for Ice Harbor. Mm-hmm. And we'll go down to Lower Monumental and the first one up for discussion. Unless anybody has anything about the two previously approved ones, we'll move to LMN-003, head gates.
Oh, I do have an issue with the first one.
Of course you do.
I have a complaint.
What's your complaint?
Is it a change or a complaint?
It's already been approved, but
oh, yes.
It's not a change. It's
so this is regarding Lower Monumental's Unit 1 priority.
Yes.
Yeah.
So first question is, how long has this unit been out?
2005.
Okay.
A long time.
That's my first jab. My second.
It's on schedule similar to Lower Granite, so that both of those in 2015 will go out and be returned to Kaplan.
Okay. And so my other question is, why is this kind of a last-on first-off unit when Granite has a similar issue? It's a fixed Kaplan, and it runs as a priority unit. So
it's a last on, first off, except when we had the temperature issue.
That's
and then
right.
We changed it.
Oh, okay.
And
so we made an exception for that.
I'm going to let Bill talk, but we had a discussion here. Do you want to add or do you want me to just keep going?
Well, either way, but the big problem we have is with low flows. If you're running unit one, you don't have enough water to bring anything else up to the 1%. So
that wasn't the explanation given in the change form. No, the explanation was something to do with pressure on the seals.
or something, so creating it a higher risk.
Let me talk about what happened this year when we had warm temperatures and the region came and asked, and LOMO project decided that they didn't want to change the priority because there were no passage issues. And at that point, we didn't really want to get into a lot of detail, but we have since at FPOM once talked about the fact that these units, when they're fixed and they sit around, particularly as long as LOMO, yeah, the seals and stuff dry up. We get oil discharges every time we turn on that unit. And so it's preferable to not get the oil discharges at all possible. And they are making some changes this winter that will hopefully minimize the level of that, but that's why LOMO Unit 1 was a higher priority than Lower Granite Unit 1, because it had sat longer, it's dried, and irregardless of when this thing gets turned on, we get an oil spill, and then there's subsequent process that has to occur. And so, yeah, they don't want to turn it on, but, you know, if that's all they have available and BPA sends them the signal, they will turn it on. But then, so that's a little bit more than we probably had broad discussion on before, but if it helps you better understand.
Okay. And so my last comment on it, you know, as you know, adult conversion is one of the missed spots for the action agencies through the system, and last year was particularly bad in the Snake. And so, you know, having these main units as the main traction unit on and running is an important issue for us. I would consider it a pretty high priority. And so I just, you know, consider it important that we get these done as soon as possible. And to sit around for 10 years not getting this done, I think, is unacceptable. We need to get all these priority units in the Snake River and need to be up and running.
I don't think that this can't slip any farther forward at this point in time, but we are looking at a similar schedule to Lower Granite. It may start a little bit earlier than Lower Granite, because remember we had the discussions when we had Dwayne Weston on the phone about the month of the year in 2015. We could report back to FPOM to you what month, but it's a very similar schedule. I think there's a chance that this one doesn't have the bridge drain issue that Lower Granite has, so we can talk some more. But it's out there to be done, and you're right. This was kind of one of those things that it broke. They blocked the units, and it kind of just faded away.
No, they've been working on the new design to install it, so
it'll reset after 10 minutes.
They'll get to it. Just have to finish the Ice Harbor design, put some units in, see if it works, and then fix them. They're eventually going to change what the units are.
I think they fixed it.
So at this point, we're just taking it back to the original design.
Some of them. But for now, I think you're going back to the original on those. But eventually, we're going to change them.
Right. But that's not what has been holding us back.
Well, I think that until the last year or two, I don't think BPA ever laid out a schedule for how soon they could change out these units. And so I think people actually thought that in the near term, it was possible that these units could be changed out, like, say, maybe in the next 5 to 10 years.
Conference.
But realistically, it's going to take a lot longer than that. And so that's why the stuff is moving again. Hey, it's got to be fixed. As well as the adult passage issue. Certainly, Lower Granite highlighted that. But LOMO was already queued up. You know, LOMO project, when we had the in-season discussion, would have liked to do it in 2014 if there was any way to facilitate it. It just,
the bridge crane's got to be stuck. And you have the crane working before you do the restacking of the blades back.
I'm not going to comment, because my recollection is that was Granite and Goose, and that there was a different issue at LOMO.
Okay, I threw you off by one.
But we had an issue that didn't allow it to get started any sooner, but they're both queued up to try to get them done as quickly as possible.
Yeah. No, I'm off by one.
That's okay. We're getting into stuff we don't mind discussing more at FPOM.
Yeah,
but
it's a high priority for us, so I want to make sure it was.
Us too. We're pushing in Charlie to make it happen.
It doesn't seem like that when it goes for 10 years.
It's the hydro system. It's time.
Glacial.
It is.
Okay, I think we're...
All right. And back to Lower Monumental 003. The head gates, or did we just talk, no, it's different head gates. So this is...
the spelling of the actual word. According to their chief.
Yeah, he came from Texas, I think they call it head gates there, so...
He wants to develop head gates at his project.
Of course, do all the other projects call them operating gates? Doesn't seem to make much sense to relabel them just because it's local.
Further call them head gates. That everything in print says operating gates.
Portland calls them head gates.
Mary called them head gates.
What does the core call them?
Depends which project you're at.
LWG or LGR?
Thank you. It's LGR, man. Yeah.
You had a fight with Green River then.
So it looks like the Portland District projects and McNary, I'll say head gates. Snake projects say operating gates.
In the Fish Passage Plan, ours says operating gates, but everybody calls it head gates. So.
I consider we call it the head gate study.
All right, so. Well, they're interchangeable. So, but this change form is more than just changing terminology. There's some sections where he actually, or she actually goes into some of the criteria.
Any comments about that one from anybody?
No, his memo, no objections. But other than that, nothing.
Okay.
I took a quick look and didn't seem to have any problems.
All right.
Does anybody have any heartburn about the head gate, operating gate change? It's...
I thought it was a no-brainer.
Okay.
I think it would be nice to
make it consistent everywhere.
If you want to take that on, I'll go for it.
If it's the same functional item, they should do that.
Okay. So which projects are operating gates? I mean, do we really?
I
guess I could put a footnote in there saying that the terms are interchangeable.
That's one of the easiest.
Yeah.
Bring your acronym sheet.
Yeah.
That's George. He's always...
Add it to the table.
Changing the changes. Thank you.
Yeah. Huh? I'll just, yeah.
All right, Goose.
Little Goose, little Goose. The first one, facts and criteria, unless someone has anything specific about that, that's just the new table. That's just the new table about the project-specific operating ranges and whatnot.
Are they
going
to add orifice size to that table?
Oh, sure.
On
at some point, yeah. That might not happen this year. So then LGS 002, spillway weir operations.
What did you decide in 001?
So that's a new table that we've added to all the projects.
Yeah.
It's basically just a table of all the different... like the river mile, the four-bay normal operating range, just common bits of information that we need to reference throughout the year.
Well, down to the juvenile section.
We had a comment from NIMS, is what he's referring to.
Yeah, I didn't know what you meant by that.
Oh, there we go, yeah. The transportation and, fish, yeah, these two.
Pretty simple. Go back up. NOAA Fisheries, or NIMS, had studies going on at First Dam Ice Harbor, and that was first built. They did their own transportation. NOAA did the transportation at that time. And as soon as Goose got built, it moved up to Goose. That's where they started at Goose for study NIMS transportation program. But in 1981, that's when it moved to Lower Granite and was turned over as an operation of the Corps. So up until then, it was NIMS.
Let's just put a star and then explain that down below. What those dates designate.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not going to remember that.
Do we need the information to begin with?
The question is it useful information? Because if it's not useful information,
I don't think any of
it might be when, you know, when I'm okay. It's trying to explain.
I can come up with I can come up with maybe three sentences for you at the bottom of that chart.
Are you here taking your
Okay.
It might be a reference on my library shelf or something.
You can door stop somewhere.
I understood everything else on that whole sheet, except I didn't know what those dates said. I'm not going to remember it after the problem today. Okay. I won't remember it tomorrow.
I know.
So that's why you're going to put a, either get rid of it or you're going to put a star and say what happened during those days.
And it's in granite as well, right?
Yeah.
Same issue with granite.
I think it's also where the Ice Harbor was too, because they started the studies at Ice Harbor. Of course, that's why. I've got the paper to explain.
Okay.
So you're spiller where? O2.
So 002, spillway weir operations. This came up last year. It was a low flow year. We met the low flow criteria to close the TSW mid to late July, and the decision was made to keep the spillway weir open to August 1st, regardless of the flow criteria, in order to provide a juvenile benefit for downstream migrating smolts. So this was the consensus, and this is what was put in. I don't know if this is still the preferred operation at considering some of the concerns with operating the spillway weir at low flows and the tail race issues.
Well, so we got comment from NIMS, and I'm glad that the project's on board, but basically their comments are that as we start talking about these operations, we've got two different trigger flows in there, and which should it be? Should it be 35 or should it be 38? I believe when I talked with Marcus Smith, Chief of Operations, yesterday, he suggested that it should be the 38. But Marcus, I'll give you a chance to comment at this point in time.
Yeah, this is Marcus up here with Goose. Just to have consistency here, it should be 38. I'm not quite sure where the 35 came from. So what was submitted was 38K. And how it ended up 35, we're not quite sure.
Okay, so maybe just a typo somewhere.
So the 35 was in there from when this criteria was first developed. Yeah. And so the 38, from my understanding, the 38 is the criteria for when Unit 1 needs to start operating throughout the full 1%, whereas the 35 criteria is more of impacts the spillway weir.
Exactly. Yeah. If you look at the footnotes, that's how it's explained.
Yeah. So, but here in the new paragraph G.4.I, it does say that it does relate the 38 KCFS criteria to the TSW. So I think that is
the confusing
potentially
point.
The one that needs to change to 35.
And that basically was the discharge where we removed that TSW to 35K.
Yep. Okay.
But didn't we pad it a little bit?
So two different things then. The 35 was removed with TSW, unless we're going to keep it running until August 1st. See, that's the
which will be adaptive management.
Just
right?
The 35 year, was relative to
35
that. 38, you're saying, is relative to Unit 1 operation.
Okay.
38 yep. For Unit 1.
Okay.
That's what it is.
That was the confusion. So,
so we make it really separate tables, you know, Unit 1 operation and a TSW?
Well, this change form was specific to spillway weir operations.
Yeah.
So for spillway weir operations, it should still read 35.
Yeah. But this change form, though, does some stuff with Unit 1 that I think we've been talking about, but we've never put it in words, too. So why don't we separate these? One having to do with getting it clear on the RSW
operation. The 35, you remove it, unless it's before August 31st.
August 1st.
The other thing is the separate.
Is that every year, Bill? You want to change that? Because that was new with the low flow year last year. So, I mean, if.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I understood it was. You leave it operating until August 1st.
And now, is there a bottom though? At some point where at some point we will have to close it for operational reasons.
Right.
But is there a tail race hydraulics issue that does become more of a problem than a benefit to downstream passage?
Well, you know, in a year I think we're going to have a multiple adjustable rear rail, which we'll be able to even go down lower than 7K.
The way it's written in the fish passage.
So what I'm saying is, in time, we'll be able to reduce the flow down.
Okay.
But this year we can't.
On the road.
So what do we do for that?
We've got to
be careful with the language for this year. So that
remember when Sean was at FPP or on meeting one time, he talked to us all specifically about Little Goose Unit 1 operation. I mean, he came down and talked to everybody about that.
Always
do it. 35, that was a spot. That's it.
That was the Erdic trip too, wasn't it?
I think
that was the whole Erdic trip, and that's how that 35 came to fruition.
Yeah.
And I remember there were some delightful conversations about was 35 too high, too low, but nevertheless, the 35 is what was settled on.
And we had conversations even after that. Mark had conversations in March, I think, in 2010 about that with Jim Dykstra.
Here's the thing. If that met that criteria around July 7th,
that's the only thing.
And then the sub-yearling migration was really underway at that time. There's a lot left of it.
Right.
So that all those fish wouldn't have the benefit.
So I mean, what we do in those cases where we need something in season, we generally put some wording in that says the decision will be made in season by TMT or something. Mm-hmm. You know, that seems more applicable here. I mean, granted, things are not looking good for high snowpack at this point in time, but you know, things can change too. So.
And honestly, the project's going to be changing anyway.
Yeah.
So. I mean, this has to be done in season anyways, because there's an Erdic trip talking about the spill patterns. They're talking about adjustable spill at CSW. I don't think we can come up with concrete language that everyone's going to buy into, because it's going to change anyway in the next couple of years. So
for this year, we started this with possibly the need to break this into two coordination
and then we'll discuss.
What would you like to see?
If you want to put the two forms, that'd be fine. I would do one for your Unit 1 operation and then one for your TSW, and then we'll muddle through as best we can.
Well, we do have another change form, the LGS-004, which does talk about the low flow, and that gets into the Unit 1 confusion. So
they may already be broken out. We just need to take out the confusion.
Take the 38 out.
Yep.
Well, exactly. In the track changes version, you can see that there was language that was already in there that talked about Unit 1, and so the attempt was that rather than just taking it out, trying to make it more clear as to what it was talking about. But you're right, I think it just maybe isn't appropriate in the section at all, because it kind of confuses the issue. So we could just refer to the Unit 1 section, if anything.
That'll work.
But I think the clarification here and the thing that came up last year is the difference is this Unit 1 flexibility within the 1% range applies when the TSW is not in service. So there is a nexus there between the Unit 1 and TSW. Mm-hmm. So that's where, you know, we were trying to add some clarification. But so do folks feel comfortable just taking out this entire paragraph then regarding Unit 1 ops? And this section is just TSW's operating criteria.
So for the benefit of them on the phone, why don't you read what you're suggesting, Lisa?
So if you're not on the web meeting, we're at change form 14 LGS-002, looking at paragraph G5, and there's some confusion regarding that because of the 38 KCFS criteria.
Okay.
wondering if that should just be completely deleted or...
Well, can you just address that in the other change form?
That's...
Oh, yeah. That's in there.
Hey, this is George Littlegoose. I think G5 should come out also. Should be spoken about in Section 4.
Yep. I agree with
Thanks.
That.
Thanks.
That'll work.
Okay. I like it. Well, then we will delete it.
And I'm sorry, just so wouldn't GI then...
So this one's hard to follow. It looks like we were having some discussion on whether the low flow trigger for shutting off the surface weir at Goose should be 35 or 38. Looks like from what I read here, we settled on 35. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. As you know... Only one surface path age is okay with that.
There's an issue there, though, because now you're, well, you'll see when we get to Section 4 with low flow turbine unit operation ranges that 38, 35 doesn't match because then 30, we're going to have to change unit 1 when we get there to a criteria of 35 by 38. So you'll see that as we talk about that in the report.
Okay, but we're going to talk about that later. That'd be great. Mm. At least you come in pretty good there.
I can hear you too, Russell.
We'll just talk to each other.
You're not
going to
hear you. This, Marcus, you know, one of the things that we were trying to do on the rewrite was to do away with the confusion. And so we need to, you know, if this is confusing again, let's make sure that whatever we do with this section and the G5 section, it doesn't create new confusion.
Trying.
That sounds
great.
I think we need more confusion.
It does seem a little convoluted. It's not as simple as it was when we submitted it. But I think you're going to find the issue is with the spillway one operating, you've got the the surface flow coming across, and it creates an undercurrent there, or jet, if you will, and that enhances that eddy. And so you got the two different ranges now of river flow at 35 and one at 38. You can't have either one. Or you can't have both at the same time. It's got to be one or the other.
All 38 means is you can start turning the unit 1 down.
Turn your mic on.
The only reason, 38 all it means is you can start turning unit 1 down. Otherwise, it's supposed to run at the 16K. So it's just a trigger. It's not, you'll be at 15 and a half, 15, 14, until you get down to 35.
It's hard to hear you guys.
Yeah, you need to.
Talk closer to your mic.
No,
38 is just a trigger to when you can start turning unit 1 down. And you'll just follow it down until you hit 35 and then you take the TSW out of service.
That's just over a period of a day or so.
It depends. You never know. It could hang up there at 36 for 2 weeks.
Well, anytime we have a trigger, it usually
comes around. So the first change is the on or after August 1st. That's new this year. So is everyone still okay with that based on how the performance tests look this year and all? I mean, just based on what we know now, are we still okay with this on or after August 1st criterion? So say we have another drought year and we end up getting to this low flow criteria of 35 KCFS on July 16th, do we still feel comfortable making that decision to hard constraint, keep it in not until August 1.
Well, that's part of the reason Derek was asking for comments, because that's where some of the comments we're asking for is let's take a look at low flow and where some of the mortality was and see what the best operation is. Yeah. We need to get that data back from that, because the performance center test report as written was pretty light on details.
Okay.
So until we get a chance to dig into it, we don't have a good idea what the best option might be.
Can we punt on this one?
So then maybe we leave it and we do adaptive management in season via TNT or something. We don't know it's going to be a low flow year. There wasn't necessarily a problem with the criteria until this past year where we needed to go to August 1. If we need to go there again, that decision can be made in season.
And not to spar on regional forums, but I guess I just would encourage that Well, TMT will always work with short-term, short fuses and such, and that's fine, but I guess I just would encourage, oftentimes we do get things there with people from Montana and other agencies that have no interest or let alone, so don't, let's not discount the use of the memorandum of coordination opportunity as well. I mean, I think we'll handle it in season, I'm just saying.
And just as far as familiarity with this issue, I think
we'll mention that in the FPP.
Yeah,
we'll
can deal
start
with it in season. However,
a coordination memo. We'll come in. We'll be starting to talk. If we start to see a low flow,
can you turn
here,
her
we
mic?
Start to see passage issues, right. Then people are going to be concerned.
Yeah. We have what, four more readings.
That's what happened last year. Exactly. It seemed like it flowed pretty smoothly last year.
Sub-yearling standard evaluation last year was done all during while the TSW was operating.
That's
and
true.
We passed the test with Houston.
No.
No.
And I think we were doing it earlier when the floors were above this level as well.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah.
So the rest, was it because of the low value of survival through the TSW? We tested that in the past.
We don't have raw specific survival. We don't have raw specific data, and the only indication is that tail race conditions seem worse than they've seen in years past. So the theory is it's tail race, but we need the data to know that.
And that's why we can postpone it one or two F-pumps, we can get the data and then have a better conversation of what...
Our participant has left the conference.
Yeah, and I would suggest that when we get the data and we want to talk about tail race conditions, we again get people from the project to talk to us about what is going on in the tail race. I had a brief discussion yesterday with Marcus that's on the phone, and I know that... in recent years, some of the bathymetry and some of the interactions hydraulically that are taking place eroding away at things I wasn't aware of, and it may well be something that people would want to consider as they're making evaluations of data as well, and or what the most appropriate operation would be. So we'll try to facilitate that at that time.
Maybe we should plan on really... you know, getting the researchers to provide, you know, as much information to help us from the performance test we did last year, and maybe plan in February FPOM really diving into this particular one. I was thinking of a patch to get us through, but I think it'd be better to get the information in and have project personnel discuss it with us so that we can make a good plan. And yes, we can at TMT make in-season adaptation management, but it's obviously better if we can reach consensus at FPOM beforehand.
Sure. Do we know that if we invite them to the February FPOM, whether or not they're going to be ready?
You have to ask Derek.
Okay.
And I'll send you one after me.
No. I guess we'll also be asking George and or Marcus to potentially join to discuss just a little bit of the real-time scenario that's out there at this point in time as well.
Okay. So I guess that will be added to the queue. As far as the changes in here that don't pertain to the August 1 date, there are some changes that were just more of an intent to clarify rather than change anything as regarding the Unit 1 stuff. So is everyone fine with that, taking out that paragraph G5? And, oh, I guess that's a different change form, sorry. So we'll add this to the queue. But since we're kind of on the topic, we can go ahead and skip to LGS 004 since it seems to be linked to the low flow operation. And it looks like it's not a change This is just an attempt to more clearly articulate how we operate Unit 1 and when we try to stick it in the upper 1% range and when we're when we need to start being able to operate it within the full 1%. This came up last year. There was some confusion, and so this is was the attempt to clarify that. And deleting a table that was probably more confusing than it was helpful. And there's a lot of backup, and it looks like Noah's memo, not ready to support.
I have trouble understanding all of the strikeouts and the non-strikeouts and this whole thing. If it's just that simple, as you explained, it has to do with the, as Scott got it real concise, that at 38 you can go to a full range of 1% on turbine unit 1, then that can be said in a lot less jargon than all of this.
Well, it's actually, it's skinny down from how it was before, mm-hmm. So that's
accept the change a little bit.
Yeah, so here's what it would look like. It's significantly less wordy, and there's a lot less, well, there's one less table, so.
It took us like 3 years, I think, to get the ability, or longer than that, to get the ability to go into GDACs.
Oh, good GDACs, yeah.
When it works.
Yeah. But now we've got that operating right, and if you can add this other twist to it to go back to a full range of 1% at 38, that's fine.
Okay. So is everyone else, so as far as the comment from the memo, do you feel like it's more clear now?
Well, I'd like to, for you to send that to me, okay? I'll read it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the track changes section is, version of it is rather messy, and it's hard to tell what was.
Send these, both of these, too, without all the changes and, you know, what you come up with finally.
Okay.
We don't have to approve these today.
Nope. Be nice, though.
He wants to print them. That would be nice to be in the print.
Okay, well.
This one, I would hope we can get printed correctly because it caused a lot of grief.
Oh, completely.
Yeah, and this one it isn't a change. It's just there was some confusion between the operator and duty scheduling and us, and so this was our attempt at getting to what the intent was, as well as trying to clearly articulate it so everybody from different backgrounds can read it and hopefully get to the same conclusion of how to operate. And there was some misunderstanding last year that Unit 1 needed to stay in that upper range throughout, which is problematic for a lot of reasons. And so this adds just clarification that flexibility kicks in at low flows. So, but there isn't any change necessarily to how we any criteria. It's just hopefully better worded.
One of the confusing parts is that many of the Unit 1s are fixed.
Yep.
And so this one is not, but it's operated like it's fixed for part of the year. And so when they shift in scheduling, they forget that this is a fixed but not really plate.
Manually.
It's manually set, not a
relationship. Yeah. And it took us, like I said, it was really hard to get it fixed to that high flow.
Yeah.
Because when we did the modeling on ERDC, we found that we needed it during certain flow conditions, we needed as high a flow along that south shore as we could get.
But that's the higher flows, and so
yeah,
this should clarify it. It's just sometimes they forget what they're reading or which project they're in.
Yep.
I look forward to the trip if you got scheduled.
I know, as Tom said, we're going to go work on the reduced model again. At these flows, we don't need to go up above 50, but we want to really concentrate on this, on this low flow.
Pick a date soon, please.
Sooner better.
I think we're trying to combine it with when the granite model is done. You know, but the earliest now, possibly mid to March.
All right, so that looks like that's it for the Little Goose section. There is one other change form, LGS-005. That's the diel graphs, same as all the other ones. So as long as no one has comments on that, we'll skip down to Lower Granite. The very first change form in there is Unit 1 Operation, which is, again, another attempt to clarify something. An attempt to clarify something that's been confusing to folks in the past. It's not a change. It's just that this unit one is actually fixed, and that the 130 megawatts is not really accurate in that it's more of a range. And so the request was to make it change from 130 megawatts to the upper 1% range, and then just adding a sentence in there as to why. So, again, it's not really a change to criteria. It's just an attempt to clarify. So if anyone has better ideas or isn't comfortable with this, then
I'm comfortable with it. I just noticed when you eliminated the table, some of the numbering seemed to be off and confusing on the
paragraph numbers.
Let's see. It goes from 4, 5, and 6 to... Anyway, the numbers didn't match with the number of tables in them.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, as things change. And so that's one of the last things I'll do is I'll go through and make sure all the tables are referring
to. It's just
a
number thing.
Yep. So I haven't yet inserted the Noah's comment. Oh, actually, no, I did. Look at that. That was... I must not have been paying attention.
So you're saying that all this isn't really a change. This is just a change or editing.
This just explains exactly why Unit 1 is operated the way it is. So it's not a change in operation. It just explains why the operation is the way it is. Mm-hmm. And you got rid of the megawatt and put upper 1% of the range.
Yes, exactly.
So thanks. We were fine with this.
Okay.
Doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, that's just clarification.
Hey, guess what? Our Unit 1 is stuck.
I want to talk about it some more. Which spot
would be stuck? Say,
what?
Say
15, I don't need to.
Operating Unit 1. Currently, if we have an adult problem.
I'm sorry?
If we have an adult delay, does it say anything in there about Operating Unit 1 as priority?
An in-season kerfuffle.
Yeah.
That's what TMG.
Yeah. that's interesting. You guys had SCT the other day. You know, this seems to be kind of an evolving door still on where we're headed. So I guess I'm not sure that I'm the most up-to-date because I wasn't at SCT and know whether you guys made progress with the actual project that's getting moving.
We're hoping for an update at Fitterwig, which I think is next week.
No, I think it's the end of February.
Yeah,
Wall of
Fitterwig
is the end of February, right?
Yeah,
the one
next week, I think, might be Portland.
Portland
is the first Thursday.
Okay.
February. So, I guess that didn't answer your question. I believe that we're each FPOM, Russ, last month brought it up. We sort of talked that if when we get the final forecast for water, if it looks like we're going into another drought year, some of the ramifications, and you know, we'll start the discussion earlier. And so I guess, yeah, what we would do at Lower Granite, certainly it's not a problem if we wanted to footnote something on Lower Granite, you know, similar to last year with the assumption that we would do, you know, operate auxiliary pumps or something, if that's where you were headed, you know. So if we were to notice that we start to develop another thermal blockage, that recommended alternative or whatever. But at this point, I kind of got a mixed signal read that those folks on the PDT and or Randy who's funding those may come in with some other requests. In other words, well, maybe they could do this if you folks wanted to approve some in-season work, you know, type stuff. Well,
that was discussed, and we're saying, yeah, we could make some work, but they were looking to see what time frame or what availability they even had.
Plus, their options might not work out because some of the pumps may not even have the ability to do what they thought they could do. So they may not have any option this year.
Weren't we focusing on Unit 1 right now, and not pumps? Is that your question, Bill?
Yeah.
Unit 1 will end up cutting into spill, and that's when it gets into the in-season arm wrestling.
But then you cut spill and pond.
Are you guys mind using your microphones? Kind of hard to hear.
We don't have to put that in this. This is just focusing on Unit 1. We'll work out the
in-season
best adult pattern is.
And we can handle that primarily and probably at FPOM this year rather than kicking it to TMT if possibly Doug. So
sure.
That's
If it's just
the pumps.
Huh?
Yeah, it's just
if it's just the pumps, we can do it in FPOM. If it turns out to be cutting into spill, it didn't.
Right. It's a water management issue, and yes.
All right. LWG002, moving on to that one, and submitted by Mike Halter, Project Fisheries, regarding gate well orifice operation. I believe this is due to this is a change regarding gate well dipping. So John or Greg, do you want to provide any background to this, or does anyone
I haven't had a real chance to talk to Mike on this one, but I do know that when they were dipping gate wells this year, they really found some patterns, and then this is what they came up with to take advantage of avoiding having to shut down the unit to do gate well dipping and make it more efficient and expedient.
So that's a little different than the NIMS comment, because the NIMS comment was they don't understand why there needed to be a change form in the short interim, because you know soon there's going to be 14-inch with a widened channel. At that time, there'll be plenty of new operations to address. So I don't think, and if this was Gary making this for Bill, or if this was Bill
I made this comment as
okay.
I just couldn't understand. I don't have a problem with him dipping depth gate wells in the interim while we get through building this new collection channel, but do we need to have put change forms in our FPP to do this?
It's a good question. Who submitted? Mike submitted this?
Definitely Mike submitted it.
So recall that we're doing gate well dipping for the John Day screens as well?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
We talked about that at the last FPOM. And so if we just have process change, he's probably trying to cover more than just the new facility. He knows that as we're working towards the new facility, this spring in April when he waters up, he's going to go out and gate well dip. And then this summer when Scott Fielding wants to start putting concrete in the Wagner horns, et cetera, once he gets the bottom plugs in, there's going to need to be a gate well dip. And then that might be it for gate well dipping. So you're right. I mean, your question is, okay, we got two isolated incidents. They're not routine operations. Is there a need for something that's non-routine to be in the fish passage plan?
Mm-hmm.
It's a reasonable question.
Yeah,
we can take that back. And yeah, I
mean, just throw a coordination form in and be done with that.
Coordination form that
on his gate well dipping, say, is how we're going to gate well dip.
Yep.
You have a problem with it, and then you're done, and you're not changing the document that you're then going to have to change back next year.
Yep.
And give me Mike Halter's phone number, and I'll call him up and so I can really understand this, okay?
Okay.
Yeah. So, 509-843-1493. Extension 263.
509-843-1493.
Okay. I'll call Mike so I can understand
that. That would help. Yeah, thanks.
He's right. He wants, well, he sees a better way to do this for this next year. He wants our approval of it.
And he's kind of.
Tom says it's probably better, more in the arena of just doing a coordination for him,
yeah,
instead of changing it.
Well, remember that Mike is planning on rotating out in June. He's going to retire. And he's kind of setting kind of the stage for probably the future as well here, or for whoever comes behind. So he may just think that this is how we should always. We always have language in there that covers if we need to gate weld them.
Yeah.
It's kind of like we have language in the biological services that says they need to assist if we need to gate weld them. We generally don't use it, but it's always there just in case.
Mm-hmm. And then we had E for it this year. This last year, I should say.
Mm-hmm. Inspection and
season. Okay. So.
Now, Mike Halter, I haven't seen that he's got a change form in here for him to retire. So he's got to get that approved by this committee, because I am.
Yeah, that's going to be a big change. Mike's been there a while. We rely on him heavily to keep things moving up there.
Yeah, are you going to go run Granite for a while in his absence?
His OPM is trying to address this whole changing scenario and work through that. So there's been talk. Mike actually wanted to go this spring. His OPM asked him, would he mind waiting until June to go through some steps? One of the steps is to have the position descriptions for these project bios reviewed and updated. Some of them haven't been updated since the 1990s. And so that he would then advertise it appropriately when he opened it. But due to some of the other things going on within the Corps right now, that has been pushed off until some other. It's in the queue, but it's just not the top of the pile, and so we're still not just certain. But the date I'm told last week is still June for Mike, and so I believe they're going to do a developmental this spring and bring somebody in and check that out, and we'll see where it goes.
Plan
to
start that in mid-April.
So, wasn't that a long story for a short comment?
Yep. So good. Next on the list, it says the ESBS inspection change form that was already brought up for McNary, so looks like it's approved, getting the thumbs up. Or any other comments, we'll move to the next one, which is LWG004, which is the new table for facts and criteria, which we'll be adding at some point orifices.
And the orifici. Comment that we discussed under Little Goose before as to the footnote on the dates of the transportation program.
Oh, yes.
Addresses the NIFS concern.
Yep. So, which brings us to LWG005, turbine unit maintenance, which is, looks like not a significant amount of changes.
The change in this thing here, they wanted to be a little bit more open about exactly what happens on it, a project when you have the cylinder in and out. Here it says 0700 right there in the paragraph where, you know, they got to have the unit operating back in, you know, with the unit, it says there in paragraph 4.32, with the unit operating gates and standard operating, turbine unit may be operating until 0700. That's what has an FTP right now. In reality, the project personnel shows up there at 6:30. Receive their assigned tasks from their supervisor, go through their safety meetings, get things going on for the day, go down to the crane, walk that crane to the gate well, get to the unit area there. We're talking close to about 30 minutes plus. And then, of course, the operation of the crane. The crane is extremely fast, as we all know. It takes them close to 20 minutes to go 10, 15 feet of line. So they're being very honest with us, saying that, hey, it's not 0700, we're going to be in violation of the next couple of hours. So they're saying 9 o'clock. That's the only reason for that.
And then the change above in 4.3.1?
Maintenance prior to units for adult passage only conducted during mid to late August. Now, we want to have Unit 1 out of service in August, right? That's what it says we can do in the Fish Passage Plan right now. We want to move that to a later period of time, October, November. They've always done it at that period of time, which is a lot more reasonable, so we can not have any problem with Fish Passage. Correct? Since last year?
So Greg is...
Well, this is short term too, because once Granite is Kaplan, it shouldn't be an issue again.
Richfield has
right?
always done it, even when it was a Kaplan years back in October.
So I think what this gets
all
at
it
is...
All it says, it can be done in August. That's what it says. It can be done in August, currently in the Fish Passage Plan. But Rich is saying he wants to do it like he's done it in the past in October.
It's October through July, or what's or later?
Well, wouldn't be by a July.
Non-Fish Passage.
You start it in October, and then 6 weeks later when it's done.
Right. But when can you start one? October or later? Later means all the way up until August of next year.
Oh, no, it would be, they're usually, so they go through the units, they got six units,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I would say October, November.
They start in mid-July, end of July, they're out for 3 weeks, generally.
3 to 6 weeks, yeah.
So give them a range, October through December.
Yeah, October through December.
Well, the sentence right before it says, annual maintenance of all turbine units is normally scheduled during the mid-July to late November time frame.
Yeah, okay.
The maintenance of priority units for adult passage is normally conducted. And it was mid-August. Now they're saying late October, and I would say this is the late November part would probably stay the same.
I think so.
Okay.
The chances are that might not, though, because
yeah.
they pushed more work months later than they used to do it, so they may squeeze it into December.
Okay.
So I don't know, do we want to box them into November and then have to come back after
yeah.
November?
So
maybe, you know, that's not reading right. Wouldn't it be conducted after mid-October or something? Or?
Well, October 1. What October?
You know, yeah, you're right. Conducted during, it should be a range. Late October to.
Just say October to November.
Wouldn't November to December be better?
Yes. Well, I mean, actually, October to December would be better because.
December.
Well,
you've got other things going on.
Well, I mean, October just.
Yeah.
Okay.
October through December.
It's just that if we're going to. Box people in, we should be boxing them in for the longer range. They're trying to get it done that year, but some years, some units are going to take more time.
I'd recommend October through December because there's a pushback on the other end to get it done
mm-hmm.
for the winter, but
right.
it's less.
Yeah,
and we have very few fish, and you know, one is the temperatures have gone down, and it's not as critical for that.
There can be quite a few fish in October.
Well, there can be, but it's usually the temperature why we want unit one. It's
yeah.
the low.
So late October to December?
Yeah. Can we just leave it October like they have?
Let's leave it October.
Okay.
All right.
Change it back.
Well, late October means what, the 30th?
But I would take out the or later part because that's what's confusing.
Right.
Yeah.
October through December.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to give it.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah. Let's see this way. It's just in late October.
Yeah, no, you're right. So I'm going to do what I did originally.
To
Oops.
December.
Yeah. That's
okay. Yeah.
All right.
So maybe we should change the sentence before that and say mid-July to December also, instead of late November. That applies till December. Late November is basically the same thing as saying December.
Is it two or three?
So we should be
yeah.
just
is it at midnight of December 1?
That's a good point. October to December, I think you should make the October through December.
But I prefer to get it in December than in October.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I prefer a dash, so it's confusing. Yeah.
And is time frame two words or one?
Dash.
Dash, hyphen, underscore, asterisk. No, I don't know. All right, so as far as that, the timing of the day goes, I mean, so you guys are fine with that too? Anyone, anyone? Trevor? Tom?
Yeah, we're fine.
Okay. All right. On to... And then there, it will be a change form for Lower Granite Diel Graphs adult distribution. So moving on to fun one. 14 Appendix B, App B001, which is regarding the change in McNary Transport and... why are we doing that? There we go. And this essentially just took out all of the McNary language regarding transport and replaced it with fish sampling protocols. And I believe Noah's comment was, why not?
Just get rid of it.
Yeah, get rid of it and do a similar to what the other non-transport sampling projects do at Bonneville and John Day. They have their own appendix with criteria in that same sort of format. And I think that's...
Yeah, I don't think we have a problem with that.
Okay.
If you guys go for that, it makes this meeting real quick.
But I want to go paragraph by paragraph, really. I think we should, like...
word by word?
I have oranges back here, Lisa.
Let's kick it all out.
I'm not afraid to throw them.
Yeah, that's right.
He throws it.
Hey. Back when she went about.
So you're fine with taking everything out regarding McNary on here?
Right.
Hopefully.
Okay.
Okay, we're good with that.
No more transport.
And no sampling theory in that section either. Its own appendix will appear like the other project.
A participant has joined the conference.
Let's get that to join.
Right on time.
So I'll work with you guys because the criteria for Bonneville and John Day are there's a format to it, so I just want to make sure that it's correct and consistent.
Okay.
So,
I
don't think I have that.
We'll have our own corrected format.
Yeah.
We unwater our units, not you water.
Walla Walla style.
Can we get in that argument again? Can we get in that argument again?
She's got.
It wasn't me.
No, we hear about it.
I don't care.
Because we hear about it.
We hear about it.
One of these days I'm just going to go through and change it and see if you guys notice.
Make it unwater. Right? An engineer would call it.
So the other question they had on this was there a change form for other changes made to this section?
Let me open it back up.
Anybody have any other change forms?
Well, so were all of the changes that were made to this section covered in a change form?
There it is.
Well, I think the comment was that some of the changes were probably more of a formatting thing, but weren't necessarily about McNary Transport, but
maybe these are changes you might be responsible for. Is that where we're going?
No, I don't know. So what it was, I'm sure. Let me see what the comment was.
There are also other changes to the Appendix B language that have nothing to do with McNary Transport.
Okay.
I think most of it was that Little Goose, Lower Granite, Star Transport dates.
Oh. So, yeah,
well,
let's...
There we go. We'll figure it all out in conversation. We'll resolve it right there. We'll be fine.
Yeah, right. Everybody will be in agreement.
Sure.
It'll be in the FPP.
No,
we're
in
it. It's right there.
It's all good.
Which one?
So,
so where are we looking at?
Are we suggesting that we need to update the language now that we have some other...
I don't know.
Out there?
I'm looking at... I'm trying to find what... changes might have been made that weren't pertaining to
maybe in the opening
Little Goose,
paragraph
Lower Granite.
Where I think
he was in mustard yellow.
Mustard yellow?
Yeah.
So I'm going up.
Mustard yellow?
I'm going up. I'm going up. I'm just going to wait until you tell me
big
to stop.
Section. Keep going. Keep going.
Maybe, was it?
Right there.
Oh.
I wonder if that's
it. Let's see. I didn't add that. That's not
that's
me.
Fopinies.
That's GPM.
FOP information. Right
that
there.
Is FOP, and actually that needs to be updated with the new biop.
Yeah, that's great.
That's antiquated now because
I didn't do it.
It wasn't 2 months ago.
There was a date set. In
so is that what you're
it was
referring
a date set,
to?
But it still has two options.
Yeah, and so that's not referring to me. Now.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's going to need some coordination.
Yeah, it's a mess. That's why TMT set up a workshop or a work group or whatever you want to call it to go through and try to come up with some agreed upon operation. Because that'll happen.
Good luck, TMT.
Hey.
Good luck.
She should come. Enjoy it.
It'll be fun.
Good eye. Okay, so then we'll basically, reject that. So there won't be any changes to Appendix B other than to go through and delete anything that has to do with McNary Transport.
Yep.
And that will be the only thing that is approved at this.
Just remove McNary from that.
Yeah, just remove McNary. The rest of it will be, oops.
I noticed that we can't agree to now anyways, because.
But why?
We can agree to it here.
I can make you an agreement. Trying to say we're done?
No, we have one more.
Oh, wait.
What?
Appendix B002 is an Ice Harbor one.
What?
So Appendix D is the new appendix regarding special operations for lamprey and other non-listed species. And Appendix D002 is for the Walla Walla projects. It just basically goes through and updates based on current information, and I'm not sure if it adds. It's basically a laundry list of what's already been accomplished. Yeah.
And what's going to be done for next year.
Funeral this one up.
And we had the request that Fitterwig get last Walla Walla, that operating criteria for that new entrance be added. Gary's asked for that. I think that's in the works.
Okay.
But it probably won't make the written, we're not sure if it'll make the written first distribution here of the FPP.
So other than that, is this one good?
For right now, yes.
Okay.
I'm having my lamprey guys review it. They'll see if there's anything that they have. Curse fumbles with quick flush was no, it's fine. But they hadn't had a chance to review it. I didn't get it to them in time,
okay.
Unfortunately.
But NOAA, according to your memo, no objections, so...
NOAA doesn't look at lamprey.
And then the comment regarding... did we already talk about this for Bonneville, the Dalles lamprey, that the way that it's written is more like a checklist rather than operational protocols, so... but, oh my gosh, it's 2:51.
Baus has something to add.
Oh, Baus.
Oh, hey, can I do it next year?
Well, what is it?
He's
how big of a pain in the butt is it going to be?
I just noticed John Day, there's a citation in there of a 25% minimum spill. Didn't know the genesis of that, but in big picture-wise, we've been encouraged to redact statements regarding Appendix E FOPS material from the narrative.
Mm.
And so, to me, when I saw that, it raised two questions. One, what was I don't know the history of that number.
It's old. It was basically, it's like one of the things, like, to get a minimum good tailored egress patterns, it's like the same 50K that we had at Bonneville. There was a minimum spill volume to set up good enough tailored egress pattern. If you're going to turn the spill on, you had to spill on 25. You couldn't spill on, like, 10% and expect to get good survival. So
it should be in the narrative, though, because we've been encouraged to include that stuff in Appendix C, not in the narrative.
If you want to make that change, let us know, and we'll read it and see what you do with it.
Gary usually objects to that. Gary and I have gone back and forth on this. Every time the course says, pull it out, put it in Appendix C, Gary says, I like having it in the narrative, because someday FOP will go away, and I say,
keep hoping.
What?
We keep hoping.
Okay.
It'll still be the spill appendix, though.
Well, yeah, but the spill appendix isn't its own special little, like, legally goofiness.
That's what Appendix E used to be, just the spill.
It used to be cut and pasted from the biop. It said this is the spill program in the biop.
Yeah, there you go.
It was all two pages.
It'll still be in that appendix regardless.
Yeah, just make it two pages.
And okay, well, so we'll get a, I'll get a copy of the agenda with all of these approved, denied, further discussion, so everyone knows where we're at. And Tammy was kind enough to take great notes and some minutes. So, but unless anyone else has anything else to add, she had a gavel.
Ka-tum.
Knock you on the head.
Yeah,
great.
There you go.
And I don't have any researchers here. Never mind.
No researchers.
Appendix A is still forthcoming, of course.
Well, and so is your FOP. FOP or spill appendix, yeah. Whatever that might be.
E.
Juncture or stuff.
All right.
Nice. Well done, guys. Now I have an hour and to kill until my van pool gets here.
Let's see. Okay.
Staffers has delightful cocktails.
Don't even tell me.
I duly noted that Bonneville, for example, I remember 3 years ago.
Thanks, everyone on the phone. Look forward to seeing you at the next F-Bomb.
I remember Gary.
They have a room for me.
They said,
yeah, you killed.
Bye-bye.